Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. FedEx offers fast delivery, more visibility, simple returns, and weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. population on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. With FedEx, you get picture proof of delivery, ensuring you always know where your package is. Returns are simple with packageless and paperless returns. Plus, FedEx Ground is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. So, what are you waiting for? See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of the hunt. But are you getting the thrill of the best deals? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Urban Outfitters, Fenty Beauty, and Expedia. And even stack sales on top of cash back. It's easy to use and you get your cash back through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Good morning. I'm Jane Pauley, and this is Sunday Morning. You might call it the greatest show off Earth. Tomorrow's Great American Eclipse lasts just a few minutes, but its path will take it over 15 states, and it will be visible to some 32 million of us. A light and shadow show like none other, likely to be remembered a lifetime. David Pogue has his eye on the sky.
Maybe you've heard. Something very cool will be happening in the sky tomorrow.
It's too much of a miracle. I just can't understand how it's going to happen all the way across in the very middle of the United States.
I cannot stress strongly enough, if you have the ability to get somewhere in the path of totality on April 8th, 2024, you need to do it.
Here's your cookie dough eclipse.
Thank you. Ahead on Sunday Morning, how America's preparing for the great eclipse.
It's perhaps a sign of our times that a soon-to-be-released movie called Civil War imagines what would happen if that sort of conflict broke out in modern-day America. Ben Mankiewicz asks, what if, to its star, Kirsten Dunst.
Citizens of America.
A president under siege, a country torn apart. Kirsten Dunst calls her new movie a cautionary tale.
Does not feel like a sci-fi movie. This could be us in, pick a year, 2025, 2026, 2024. Is that fair?
Hopefully not. I mean, but I do think it's a warning. I do.
The film that may leave you thinking the unthinkable. Coming up on Sunday Morning.
The Tony Award-winning musical The Wiz is back on Broadway. And in its title role, Kelafasane tells us, a man perhaps best known for a very different role.
Who wants to make a deal?
Let's Make a Deal's Wayne Brady is The Wiz on Broadway.
Keep your eyes open and the magic you will see.
Half a century after the original Wiz premiered, how much pressure is there for this thing to work?
For me personally, I think it needs to work. And for every single person on this stage, this is our people, our culture reflected in this fairy tale.
He's on down the road.
Later on Sunday morning, he's on down the road with the Wiz.
You might be surprised to learn that women spend almost a third of their lives in what we call the change of life. Still, there's far too much misinformation about menopause. Tracy Smith tries to clear things up. Ben Tracy introduces us to the real Captain Cook. Aaron Moriarty looks into a troubling loophole in foster care benefits. It's a Sunday morning for the 7th of April, 2024. And we'll return after this.
This spring, if you'd rather spend time enjoying your lawn instead of trying to keep it alive, there's good news. TruGreen is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and even some things you might not even think of. They'll do all of it, while you can do literally anything else. With True Green, you could have your lawn looking as good as a putting green. That's not hyperbole. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. True Green offers a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people guaranteed.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Grab those glasses. David Pogue has a sneak preview of tomorrow's Great American Eclipse.
Tomorrow's total eclipse of the sun won't be any old eclipse.
This one is being referred to as the Great American Eclipse. And the reason is it's going through some very populated areas of the United States.
We're in this area where 60 to 70%...
Astronomy author and educator Ed Ting says that in a solar eclipse, the moon passes exactly between your eyes and the sun and casts its shadow on the Earth.
And the shadow is only about 100 miles wide. So you have to be in a specific place on the Earth to witness the solar eclipse.
Solar eclipses actually take place every 18 months or so. But during most of them, the spectacle is wasted on empty ocean. But tomorrow afternoon, the moon's shadow will leave 32 million Americans in 15 states briefly in the dark. It's all the result of a freakish cosmic coincidence.
When we see the photos, we see this perfect black disk, that's the moon, and then we see that corona of sunlight around it. How does it happen that the sun and the moon appear to be exactly the right size for each other?
It's interesting the way eclipses happen because the sun is 400 times bigger than the moon. But by happy coincidence, it is also 400 times further away. So from our perspective, they are the same size.
But the thrill of an eclipse isn't just about what's overhead.
It's the sky and everything else around you. The wind sometimes starts to pick up. Animals get confused. The streetlights come on.
How dark does it get? Is it like nighttime?
It's not like nighttime. The sky takes on this sort of fish scaly, shimmery quality, and you will freak out. You can understand why the ancients ascribed such spiritual or religious significance to eclipses, because you will feel very strange. Half of the people who see an eclipse for the first time will cry.
If you live in the path of the eclipse, you may notice one more effect, a lot more traffic.
Our town will grow twice its size, which means 160,000 people might be in town for the eclipse, and we're very excited about it.
Carrie White is the chairman of the Eclipse Oversight Committee for Jonesboro, Arkansas, where the moment of totality, complete blockage of the sun, will last 2 minutes 17 seconds.
Our police department, our fire department, City Water and Light, they've all been working for over a year to design a plan.
On April 8th, park your ride, protect your eyes, and look at the sky.
There are a total of 4 spots where you can view the eclipse.
There are Kerry Whites all over the country.
Everywhere, all over the country, that are doing exactly what I've been doing. It's a big, big deal.
Looking directly at the sun can permanently damage your vision, which is why you need eye protection.
We ordered 75,000 pairs of glasses, and we have been working for weeks to pass them out to all the schools. We've passed them out at all of the major businesses, the library, the city hall. If you don't have a pair of glasses and you live in Jonesboro, I don't know how to help you.
But here's something about the glasses you might not know.
Once totality hits, you can take the glasses off.
Oh, why is that?
Yeah, because there's not much light coming from the sun. Once the sun starts to come out again, you do need to remember to put your glasses back on.
Cameras need protective filters too. But here's a classic piece of advice for would-be photographers.
See your first eclipse, photograph your second. And I have seen this personally, where there is an eclipse and the person is not looking up, they're fiddling with their camera, and then before you know it, the eclipse is gone. You never saw it, and you didn't get the picture.
Of course, all the precautions in the world won't help you if the conditions aren't right.
I have to bring up the W word. What happens if it's cloudy and the weather is bad?
I guess I'll cry. Don't talk to me about the bad stuff.
Fortunately, it's mostly good stuff.
When you consider that this truly is the great American eclipse because it goes through the center of the United States, it just puts you in awe. I just know that it's going to be wonderful, and I'm going to take it all in. Every second of my 2 minutes, I'm going to take in and enjoy.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
It's a complicated time of life when questions seem to outnumber answers. From Tracy Smith this morning, Menopause Explained.
On any given night in Las Vegas, the crowds show up for what's become one of the hottest shows in town.
My God, I'm hot!
Yeah.
Having a hot night.
That kind of hot. This is Menopause, the musical, about the challenges of the change, from hot flashes to weight gain.
Nothing I can do, cause it sticks like glue to my thigh.
It's 90 minutes of singing on a topic people used to just whisper about, and it's been around for more than 2 decades, say producers Kathy and Alan Glist.
So I'm trying to picture what it must have been like to put on Menopause, the musical, 20-something years ago. Did people even say the word menopause out loud?
Not out loud. It was called the silent passage because there was such a stigma, almost shame, attached to it at that time.
Shame, shame, shame.
Like hot flashes and mood swings usually start in what's called perimenopause, the months or years leading up to menopause itself. And if you didn't know that, you're not alone.
So is there an upside to menopause?
There is a huge upside to menopause.
Dr. Sharon Malone is an OBGYN and an author who's trying to take the mystery out of menopause with a new book aimed at grown women.
Do you think most women know what to expect when it comes to menopause?
They do not. Most women have no idea when this whole perimenopause or menopausal transition starts.
Yeah, how long does this last?
That's the $64,000 question. People, well, how long is it? Every woman is different, but the average is in the range of years, not months.
Now you can get back to feeling like yourself again.
There are new treatments for menopause symptoms out there. Just turn on your TV.
This is a hot flash.
But the most common is hormone replacement therapy, or HRT. It's basically a cocktail of different types of estrogen to put back what the body isn't making enough of. Starting in the 1940s, that estrogen mixture came in pill form, sold under the clinical-sounding name Premarin. And you're not going to believe where it comes from.
So the name Premarin is?
Pregnant mare's urine. Premarin. And most people don't realize that, but it's an inexhaustible supply of these estrogens. And horses, you can imagine, put out a lot of urine, and as long as you keep the mares pregnant, you have an almost inexhaustible supply.
And until 2002, it seemed there was an inexhaustible supply of menopausal women lining up for hormone replacement therapy.
Estrogen is not the only answer, but it is the most effective answer. For women who are symptomatic, and by that I mean women who have, you know, hot flashes, night sweats, sleeplessness, mood swings, and the list goes on, nothing treats those symptoms better than estrogen therapy. And that's period, end of sentence.
When I started having hot flashes and night sweats at menopause, my doctor recommended hormone replacement therapy.
By the early 2000s, an estimated 6 million menopausal women were taking hormones, but then HRT got a black eye. Through the 90s, a big government study called the Women's Health Initiative was investigating a link between estrogen and a decrease in heart disease.
It was just to see if estrogen prevented heart disease.
Exactly. That was the primary hypothesis in that study.
But the study's directors found something else, and on July 9th, 2002, they dropped a bomb.
They did not find the expected benefit in the decrease in the risk of cardiovascular disease, which was troubling in and of itself. But more importantly, there was a 26% increase in the risk of breast cancer. And when they reported out the increased risk in breast cancer, it was almost game, set, and match for the hormone therapy market. Women are more afraid of breast cancer than they are of cardiovascular disease, despite the fact that more women die of cardiovascular disease than breast cancer at any age.
But the headlines didn't tell the whole story. A closer look at that study showed that for most women, the risk of breast cancer from hormone therapy is actually very low, and that for younger women, it does lower the risk of cardiovascular disease. Still, it seems most women only heard the bad news and started throwing their hormone pills down the drain.
Women just tossed it. They're like, I'm not taking this. I don't care how I feel. I'm not going to do this because you are increasing my risk of breast cancer.
What's more, the news also had a chilling effect on women's health issues in general, says Jennifer Weiss-Wolf from the Brennan Center for Justice at NYU Law School.
Menopause became absolutely deprioritized. Doctors stopped learning about it, medical schools stopped teaching about it, and the government stopped funding federal research for it. So we found ourselves in an information vacuum that persisted all the way up until this new chapter where people have started demanding change.
Things are changing. There are several bills addressing menopause education and treatment working their way through Congress.
To establish the first ever White House initiative on women's health research.
And just last month, President Biden signed an executive order authorizing millions for things like menopause research.
Hi, welcome guys.
And at the grassroots level, women are making change by talking about the change.
I'm in the vagina business now.
Welcome to Menopause Mondays. This gathering is in San Diego, but it could be anywhere. A little wine, a few laughs, and a whole lot of information about menopause.
Menopause is very exciting because it's that one day, and that is when your ovaries have retired. Okay? They're pooped. They're done.
The cheerful MC is Ellen Dolgen, who started holding these seminars 20 years ago after a bad experience with her own menopause.
My goal is to educate women. You know, my motto is suffering in silence is out and reaching out is in. And I don't want anyone to go through what I went through because I was completely uneducated. And it shouldn't be. It's not necessary.
And there is an information gap. Some of the women we talked to were actually dealing with perimenopause. They just didn't know it.
It turns out after this workshop, I realized that I do have symptoms. I've just been kind of brushing it off as life, you know, like I can't sleep less just because I'm busy and brain fog. I'm just juggling a lot of things.
Is anybody having a hot flash here?
Dolgen has hosted these parties in more cities than she can count, and she says there's no end in sight. To her, menopause is having a moment.
I think it's kind of chic right now.
Like, menopause is chic?
Yeah, like I'm wearing my menopause right now, and I think I'm pretty damn chic.
And so the big news flash here might be ignorance about menopause is out. Suffering is out. Treatment is in. Dr. Sharon Malone.
I want women to understand that, you know, menopause is inevitable. If you have ovaries, you will go through menopause, whether you have symptoms or not. The message is that menopause is inevitable. Suffering is not.
Do you think women still have this idea that we are supposed to suffer?
We have sort of incorporated the language of suffering into the entirety of women's existence. You know, we have to get used to the fact that it's okay to want to feel better. It's okay. Why do we as women not have the ability to make decisions for ourselves without feeling guilty? Put yourself first to say that my quality of life is important. What's wrong with that?
It's a new movie that imagines what most of us consider unthinkable, yet another American Civil War. But talking with its star, Kirsten Dunst, Ben Mankiewicz asks, what if?
America's darkest chapter has never been far from Hollywood's vivid imagination.
With him goes the last semblance of law and order.
From Gone with the Wind,
the scavengers aren't wasting any time.
The Glory.
On the
to Lincoln. Movies have brought us the barbarity and the politics of the Civil War.
I can't accomplish a damn thing of any human meaning or worth until we cure ourselves of slavery and end this pestilential war.
But what if that pestilential war were merely our first Civil War? That's the premise of a new film called Civil War, opening this week. An unflinching and relentless look.
Well, you're American, okay?
At a nation divided and violent.
What kind of American are you?
Not in the 1860s, but today.
You don't know?
It does not feel like a sci-fi movie. This could be us in, pick a year, 2025, 2026, 2024. Is that fair?
Hopefully not. I mean, but I do think it's a warning. I do.
Kirsten Dunst leads the cast, playing a war photographer. Along with three other journalists, they drive from New York to D.C., hoping to interview the president before rebel forces, led by Texas and California, reach the White House.
At the heart of all of this, it's really about humanity and what happens when people stop treating each other like human beings.
The lack of humanity in a few scenes is shocking as we follow these reporters along the back roads, encountering an America entirely broken. No rules, no decency.
Who's giving you orders?
And a cold-blooded disregard for human life.
Someone's trying to kill us. We are trying to kill them.
Why is the film unnerving? And I think the obvious reason it would appear to be unnerving is that it's a film about the product of polarization and division.
Alex Garland, an Englishman, is Civil War's writer and director. He leaves unanswered questions of how the war begins and, to some extent, who the good guys are. We're left with a movie that's intentionally vague. Garland wanted this story seen through the eyes of reporters, even though a colleague told him that was box office poison.
They said, don't make a film about journalists. Everybody hates journalists. And I thought that was a really interesting thing to say. It's sort of like saying everybody hates doctors. You can't hate doctors because you need doctors. And actually, any healthy country needs journalists. It needs freedom of the press.
Today, the audience will certainly be talking about the film's president, who, we learn, is serving a third term and has abolished the FBI.
Some are already calling it the greatest victory in the history of military campaigns.
He's played by Nick Offerman, who says the character was not inspired by any commander-in-chief, past or present. Offerman does say the film offers a warning that, given today's political climate, Americans need to heed.
Our ego and our history wants to allow us to believe that we're above such things that, you know, lesser countries around the world may engage in, but we're Americans, you know. We drink the finest cola beverages. We're immune to such things.
There's an underlying truth with everything difficult, which is nobody's immune.
Are you guys aware there's like a pretty huge civil war going on all across America?
Seeing this happen here is an unsettling experience, one shared by the cast, including Wagner Moura, himself a former journalist, and Kaylee Spaney, two of the three reporters traveling with Kirsten Dunst.
Oh my God, like, why didn't I just tell him not to shoot them?
They're probably gonna kill them anyway.
It was the first time that I felt like the message really went through me. You know, it felt like a gut punch, and I came out of it feeling like I want to take action, you know, that I don't want it to ever get to this point.
I'm really making an effort to sit down and listen to people that I disagree. And I was absolutely surprised to see that if you value democracy, if you think that democracy is an important thing, then there are lots of common ground.
And I personally have never felt the way I felt coming out of the theater. And I was in the movie and I was just as shocked. It felt like it was meant to be. I've never had that experience in a film before.
For Kirsten Dunst, that's saying something. She's been in movies since she was a kid, landing her first meaty role at 12.
She's not!
Opposite Tom Cruise and Brad Pitt in Interview with a Vampire.
Do you want me to be a doll forever?
Big teen movies followed, The Virgin Suicides and Bring It On, then three Spider-Man films. In 2022, Dunst earned an Oscar nomination for her aching performance in Power of the Dog. Now 35 years into the business, she knows Civil War is unlike anything she's done before.
I'd never played a role like this. I think that this is one of the most important films that I've ever been a part of. I think that it respects the audience and lets them put their own beliefs onto what's happening.
You're saying it's about the audience. What does that mean in this case for this film?
I think it's up to the individual to take whatever their political beliefs are, and they will imprint, watching the film, what it makes them feel, or whose side is what side. And I think that's really interesting, and we'll get a lot of conversations that we need to have happen. And that's the beautiful thing about art. It's like that's what you want to be a part of in filmmaking, is to push boundaries and give something that no one's seen before, because I haven't seen a film like this before.
Whatever the audience projects, it will come with a degree of unease in a country that has always been comforted by the notion that this could never happen here, not again.
Unless we come to our senses, our polarized, divisive, non-communicative, accusatory state is going to continue unless we do something about it.
I hope as many people see it as possible, and I hope that it helps us slowly trudge ourselves towards trying to find decency in our society and supporting that and turning our backs on the forces that make us look in the other direction and can lead us to things like what happens in this movie.
That divide us.
Yeah.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
His is a familiar name. Plenty of Hawaiians wouldn't mind eradicating from history. Ben Tracy explores the complicated legacy of Captain Cook.
On the big island of Hawaii, where the waves roll into Kealakekua Bay, a white obelisk 27 feet tall looms over the shoreline. It's a tribute to the great circumnavigator, Captain James Cook. It stands just feet from where he died.
I live right across from his monument, and I get up every morning and I see this. This is where they lived.
Akone Pelekat Nelson is a native Hawaiian, or Kanaka, as they call themselves. He works for the Office of Hawaiian Affairs, advocating for the native people.
As a kid, what were you taught about Cook?
He brought a lot of diseases. He brought a lot of problems to our society. He introduced westernization.
Is there a frustration that a lot of people almost think the history began here with Captain Cook?
Yes.
Captain Cook is a controversial figure, villain or hero, colonizer or trailblazer, depending on who is telling the story. But what is not in dispute is that in the 1700s, the British explorer literally put much of what we now know as the Pacific Ocean on the map, creating detailed diagrams of the places he was the first European to discover, including New Zealand, Australia, the Cook Islands, which still bear his name, and the islands of Hawaii.
Whatever you think about Cook, he's certainly in the pantheon of the greatest explorers of all time.
He gave us the contours of the Pacific Ocean.
Hampton Sides is author of the new book, The Wide, Wide Sea, documenting Cook's final and fateful voyage.
He had three voyages around the world. Each one was monumental. But the third voyage left England in July of 1776, just as the American Revolution was taking off.
What was this voyage supposed to be about? What were his marching orders from the crown?
So Cook's third voyage was to go around the Cape of Good Hope and then to proceed to the west coast of North America and all the way up to Alaska in pursuit of the elusive, the fabled Northwest Passage.
So on his way to trying to find the Northwest Passage, he stumbles upon these islands out here in the Pacific. What was his reaction?
He couldn't believe that he had found these islands, first of all. He's like, they aren't on the maps. These aren't just little lowly atolls somewhere out there in the Pacific. These are massive volcanic islands with thousands and thousands of people living here, a whole thriving, flourishing civilization. He couldn't believe it. He was astounded. They were brought up here to this heiau, which is a sacred temple.
He showed us where Cook and his men came ashore on the Big Island, warmly welcomed by the native Hawaiians at this temple during a religious festival. Sides writes in his book that unlike many of his contemporary explorers, Cook took a genuine interest in the people he encountered. He treated them with respect, tried to prevent his men from spreading venereal disease, and made little attempt to convert them to Christianity.
And yet on his third and final voyage, something was wrong with Cook. He was mercurial, he was violent, he was cruel to the native people that he encountered as well. He just was losing it all the time near the end.
That end came when Cook and his men overstayed their welcome, attempting to hold the King of Hawaii ransom to get back a rowboat taken by the local people.
and it turned into a brawl and a melee, and things did not go well for Captain Cook.
Cook was killed on the shore of Kealakekua Bay on Valentine's Day, 1779.
Just across the bay there is where it all ended.
This is where he met his end.
And yet nearly 250 years later, Cook's story is still being told, revisited, and revised as the age of imperialism has not aged so well. Statues of Cook have recently been toppled in Canada and Australia. His monument here in Hawaii defaced. Cook was the leading edge of what Pacific Islanders call the fatal impact and the death and loss of their culture that followed.
Now, I get the fact that he has become a symbol of imperialism because he was the first. It's easy to just assign the blame on one person rather than all the people that came after him.
Yet here on the Big Island, you still find Cook's name on a post office, roadside stands, and an apartment complex. There's no simple break from this piece of the past.
Historically, what is this area?
So this is called Kawalumalie.
This National Historic Park is one of the last places on the Big Island that still looks like what Captain Cook and his crew would have seen centuries ago. It was known as a place of refuge, where if you broke a rule or a law, you could get a second chance. Keola Owong is chief of interpretation and education.
But does this in some way feel like a place too that is a second chance of preserving this history? Mm-hmm. All this history that existed before the stuff in the history book?
Yeah, I would agree with that, yeah. So it's a second chance for us to get to tell our story, yeah, and tell it from our perspective.
She wants people to see Hawaii as more than a tourist attraction, more than white sands and scarlet sunsets. A place that existed long before it was discovered by a captain named Cook.
When most tourists come to Hawaii, do you get a sense that they know much about the history?
No, they don't know much about the true history. I think they see the history told by the Western point of view. Our culture is very much alive. Our culture carries on, it continues.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
It's Sunday morning on CBS, and here again is Jane Pauley.
That's Diana Ross and Michael Jackson in the groundbreaking movie The Wiz. Now, this beloved film is returning to its roots on Broadway. Kelafasane catches up with The Wiz, Wayne Brady.
On Let's Make a Deal, Wayne Brady is the host.
So you wanted to meet the wizard.
But right now on Broadway, he's the Wiz.
Let me tell you that you've come to the right place. Shall I make you a frog or a lizard?
Does it really sink in when you see your face on the wall?
I think it sinks in. This never gets old. I mean, come on. It's my big old head on Broadway.
It's very believable. If I saw that, I would think that guy can give me whatever I need.
See, then half of the job is already done.
Sweet thing, let me tell you about the world and the way things are.
In this revival of the Tony Award-winning musical set to open in mid-April, Brady's Wiz is both a showman and a con man, promising the world to Dorothy, the Scarecrow, the Tin Man, and the Lion.
It's just nice to know when your art touches someone.
Part of the fun of the show is there's so much buildup. It's called The Wiz. They've heard that you're The Wiz.
And it's
everyone's
coming.
Talking about The Wiz. It's coming. We hit the intermission. Still no Wiz.
You spend a whole act waiting for this cat.
And finally, we see whatever this is.
Yes, this. This is my throne.
It's like a human-sized hookah or something.
It's his place of power. Mm. It's his throne. That's the whole thing about The Wiz. Because you come out in something like this, you have to have the energy to live up to this thing.
Dig this. A magic slipper-wearing wicked witch killer who goes by the name of Dorothy.
We first met Brady earlier this year in San Francisco.
So you wanted to meet the wizard.
Where he joined the show in the final months of a 13-city national tour.
Tell me about this thing that seems like it would be tricky, which is this production is up and it's going, and then you've got to jump in as the Wiz. Is it like jumping on a moving train?
Exactly it. That's exactly what I'd say. It's like being shot out of a cannon. It's like double dutch with 30 other people on stage.
The tour was a boot camp and a bonding experience.
So collapse in so that you're ready to go into this.
Especially for Nichelle Lewis, who plays Dorothy.
If I'm up or down, if I'm here or there.
Avery Wilson, the Scarecrow.
And you can't get out of the game.
Philip Johnson Richardson, the Tin Man.
Slice some oil to me, girl. Woo! Does that feel good?
And Kyle Ramar Freeman, the Lion.
I'm a mean old lion.
You're actually friends and like each other outside of the theater space. Mm-hmm. So when you can find that in a cast, that is so evident on stage. You can tell we like each other, there is love, and that we're having fun doing this together.
Come on in, ease on down the road.
Put your right foot in front of the left. Come on in,
ease on down the road.
With opening night just days away, changes are still being made to a musical with a long history. L. Frank Baum's novel, The Wonderful Wizard of Oz, was published in 1900 and transformed, 39 years later, into a beloved movie with Judy Garland following the yellow brick road to the Emerald City.
You're off to see the wizard, the wonderful wizard of Oz.
In 1974, a new all-black musical called The Wiz rewrote the story. Now Dorothy wasn't just off to see the wizard, she was easing on down the road. Reviews were mixed, but audiences loved it.
Can you feel a brand new thing?
The film version of The Wiz starred Michael Jackson, Lena Horne, Richard Pryor, and Diana Ross as Dorothy.
One thing I had kind of forgotten about the 1978 movie is that Dorothy is a grown-up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
She's a teacher. She's wearing a blouse.
Yeah. Very different.
She's got heels on, okay?
My Dorothy is a little bit more of a teenager, and she's just trying to figure everything out and find her voice, so.
She had a little sass, too?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Of course. She's a black girl.
Period. Lips.
Yes, I always layer that in, always.
The point blank period vibe.
Exactly. And I do that too.
The idea behind this revival was to update The Wiz, but not too much.
What's new with this production is we're all similar in age. Usually Dorothy has like three old uncles. Mm-hmm. But now she has three friends, and that makes it a different experience. And we're singing the arrangements like are incredible.
When I saw it, it felt like Ease On Down the Road was almost an extra character in the show because people love that song so much. And as soon as they hear the beat, they start moving.
Oh, clapping.
Yes, singing.
Clapping.
It's amazing to see, though, that how people receive the music in itself still to this day. It's kind of embedded in everyone.
And also, there are songs that I feel like that people, they're like, oh, wow, I didn't realize I love this song so much.
I wish I was home. I wish I was back there with the things I've been knowing.
While audiences may recognize the music, they might also notice what's missing. There's no Toto, no flying monkeys, and no squad of police mice on patrol. Most of the changes come from director Shelley Williams and comedian and writer Amber Ruffin.
We wanted this Wiz to not be of the 70s like the other Wiz is. We wanted this Wiz to be of no time. for it to be timeless, for us to not use any slang that you won't be using in 30 years.
Put your arms around me, child, like when you bumped your shin.
And audiences will find out that Dorothy came to live with Aunt Em in Kansas after the death of her beloved mother and father.
Why was it important to flesh out Dorothy's backstory and to tell us about her parents?
It's a little bit of my own crusade as a director. You know, I think it's really important that we're not presuming that you've got like a deadbeat mom and that we are really dignifying what your life is. Same thing for the Lion, Tin Man, Scarecrow, that we knew that they belonged to people who loved them, that there are people that miss them, and that we are constantly reinforcing this idea of belonging and legacy.
To give everyone such a rich backstory, it makes it such a complete story. Mm. Whereas before, the thing with The Wiz and The Wizard of Oz, it's almost vignettes. Mm-hmm. It's almost sketches.
Yeah.
But here to make a real through line for the whole thing, it feels like a musical.
If you're gonna bring me something, bring me something I can lose. Don't you bring me no bad news.
Both Williams and Ruffin are confident.
So you wanted to meet the Wiz.
That, unlike the character in the show, their Wiz won't disappoint.
Broadway is a very hit or miss place. How much pressure is there for this thing to succeed?
I feel like, sure, there's immense pressure. We took something that is precious to everyone and we messed with it. But there is zero pressure because I have seen high school productions of The Wiz where I'm like, this is the best show I've ever seen. The Wiz is just good. It's a good show. I'm not saying it's bulletproof, but I'm saying if you come to this theater to have a good time, you will have a good time, and that's a guarantee.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Children in foster care are among our most vulnerable. So how is it that the system supposed to look after their well-being is instead depriving them of an essential benefit? Erin Moriarty has the anatomy of a loophole.
My family was really centered around education and getting A's, getting B's and everything.
Katrina White remembers just how determined her parents were to see her and all her siblings go to college.
I'm the last, I'm the baby.
That never happened.
Which parent did you lose first?
I lost my father first. I was 9 years old.
Then you lost your mom too.
I lost her in 2013.
After living initially with an older sister, White spent most of the next 7 years in group homes like this throughout Southern California.
When you were younger, did it ever occur to you you'd end up in foster care?
No, I didn't even know what foster care was.
Ian Marks also landed in foster care.
I grew up in New Orleans, Louisiana, and I was in foster care for 8 years.
I'm Anthony Jackson.
Anthony Jackson, known as AJ, spent his teenage years as a ward of the state of Minnesota. Justin Cachetta in Michigan.
I grew up in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and I was in foster care for about 3 years.
Each of these young people ended up in the care of the state for the worst possible reason, the death of one or both parents.
When I was 15 years old, unfortunately, my father got diagnosed with a aggressive form of cancer.
Ian Mark's story is particularly heartbreaking. His mom and dad were both in the military.
And my dad had killed my mother when I think it was around like 11 or 10 years old. I found her body in my house.
But their shared loss doesn't end there. After being placed in foster care, they discovered that government benefits that they should have been receiving after the deaths of their parents had instead been claimed by the state.
Social Security benefits.
Death benefits?
Yes.
Social Security and veterans benefits.
And while I was in foster care, I realized that I was supposed to be receiving these benefits. I inquired with my caseworker, and they informed me that they would be taking the checks to reimburse themselves for my care and my siblings' care.
And that's the issue here. In most states, foster kids receive their care for free. The only children who are singled out to pay for their own care are those receiving federal benefits, either because they're disabled or have a deceased parent.
It's not the state's money to take. It's the child's money. It's their property.
Amy Harfeld is the National Policy Director for the Children's Advocacy Institute at the University of San Diego School of Law. She says that children who have lost parents are often the most vulnerable.
We know that these young people have needs, and we know that when the benefits are applied for, there's a good use for them, but right now they're being used only to benefit the state.
But aren't they taking the money for foster care?
No, they're taking the money, really, in most cases, to put in general state accounts.
Nationally, 3/4 of those in foster care entitled to benefits, more than 25,000 children, are affected by this practice. But Amy Harfeld says most kids have no idea, since agencies often apply for survivor and disability benefits without giving notice to the child or his or her relatives.
For sure, the secrecy is really the most insidious piece of this. You know, a lot of states might stand up and defend this practice. And to them, I would say, if this is all above board, why is it you're doing it behind the kids' backs? Why is it that you're never telling them or their attorneys that you're doing this?
The Social Security Administration estimates that $174 million in benefits a year are at stake. But Harfeld believes the number is actually higher. States are required by federal law to report back to the agency how much of these benefits they take each year, but only about a dozen comply.
My mother didn't do all this work in the military just for the state to take this money and, as you can hear, do nothing with it. No changes, no benefits for me.
Ian Marks had it better than most. He was placed with one family, but often older children end up in group homes or bounce from one place to another.
I lived in 4 different homes and attended 4 different schools during high school.
And if it's difficult to thrive in foster care, it's even harder, they say, when you age out.
I aged out at 18 years old. You don't have access to a caseworker anymore, and you're basically on your own. They may check and see if you have a job or if you have a place to stay, but if not, then you may just end up on the side of a street, which has actually happened to a lot of people.
I was kind of like over here.
People right like Katrina White. When she aged out of foster care at the age of 21 in the fall of 2022, she ended up here, living in a tent alongside a busy San Diego freeway.
I would just wake up in the morning before like the streetlights are off fully and look around and be like, do I really want to be here?
White lived this way for more than 7 months while working part-time and taking college classes online. Where would you mostly do your classes?
In my tent.
Were you scared?
I was.
I can't think of a single person who would have persevered in her situation.
Sarah Powder, once a foster child herself, is now a project manager for a California nonprofit that helps people like Katrina, who have no place to live after foster care, to find housing.
Every day for her was, where can I go take a shower or use a bathroom so I can manage my hygiene and I can go to school and work and try to blend in?
White was homeless and penniless, says Powder, while welfare agencies have been collecting her survivor benefits for years.
I happened to just piece it together with Katrina because I remembered in one of our earlier conversations that she mentioned both her parents had passed away. This happens behind the backs of young people.
How widespread is this?
We think it's very widespread and that most states are doing it.
It hasn't been easy to end the practice, says Illinois Congressman Danny Davis. He's been pushing since 2016 for Congress to prohibit states from taking federal benefits from foster children.
Let's put it in some kind of reserve, a fund, so that as those individuals age out of the system, they may have a nest egg. How are you?
So far, Congressman Davis has been unable to get any version of the bill to a vote.
It has been challenging, I'll put it that way.
But there is a growing recognition that children need more support when they leave foster care. Seven states have now passed laws to help children keep their federal benefits, although a similar bill in California was vetoed by the governor last year due to a shortfall in the state budget. And there are signs that the federal agency that pays the benefits may do more.
Why should children who happen to be also entitled to Social Security benefits have to pay for the foster care that other kids don't have to pay for?
Well, and that's the question. I don't believe that it's fair. I don't believe it's the right policy outcome.
Martin O'Malley, a former governor of Maryland, became commissioner of the Social Security Administration late last year.
Clearly, there's a desire, a hope, that some of these dollars will be conserved for kids that are receiving Social Security benefits. But it doesn't happen very often.
So you're admitting it doesn't happen. Isn't that a violation of your own regulations that this money is supposed to be conserved for these kids?
At this point, it is not. But the question is, should it be?
But any future changes will come too late for AJ and other children aging out of foster care now.
About how much money do you think you would have collected if you had been given those benefits?
A little under $72,000.
Over 6 years?
Over 6 years.
You didn't see any of that?
Not a dime.
And what about you, Justin? Do you know how much money?
Yeah, over $18,000 was taken.
All four have still managed to beat the odds and have gone on to college. Anthony Jackson is working on an art degree. Ian Marks is in law school. Justin Cachetta recently graduated from the University of Michigan. Katrina White is studying social work and now has stable housing.
SCSU has a great.
And Sarah Powder, who was once there herself, says these are the lucky ones.
Why do you feel so strongly about this issue of benefits?
Because the outcomes of the young people who leave foster care are so bad. So until we have created a system that ensures that foster youth get everything that they need and that they make this transition to adulthood successfully, then it does not make sense for us to intercept money that could help them do that.
Thank you for listening. Please join us when our trumpet sounds again next Sunday morning.
If you like CBS Sunday Morning with Jane Pauley, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
I've been a reporter for more than three decades, and along the way, I've been talking to myself in notebooks I've carried in my back pocket. They've captured thoughts about life, parenthood, death, friendship, and more. I'm John Dickerson, and I'd like you to join me in figuring out what these 30 years of notebooks mean in my new podcast, Navel Gazing. Each episode, we dig through the piles of notebooks that I've been collecting, and from their entries, try to sort out what makes a life. This collection of audio essays is available wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, it's Stephen Colbert, and I'm here to tell you about The Late Show Pod Show, which is the podcast of The Late Show with me, Stephen Colbert, and I'm here with my producer of the podcast, Becca. Hi, Becca.
Hi, Stephen.
And how long have you been the producer of this?
We've been doing this for 2 years now.
Okay. And what is it like to attempt to get feedback from me about the podcast? Be honest about how quickly I respond to emails.
You actually respond to emails surprisingly fast.
Really? I think you might be the only person I respond to. Respond to quickly. Oh, well, that's good.
Yeah.
I expected you to lay into me.
Well, this was over the strike period.
Oh, I had time.
Yeah.
See, that doesn't count. Sure, I responded to everything because responding to you putting reruns up on the podcast was like a form of employment.
Yeah.
And I felt like I had something to get up for every day. So thank you for that. Listen to The Late Show Pod Show with Stephen Colbert wherever you get your podcasts.